everybody. Let's go ahead and get started and let people come in as they will. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I think I know many of you here. I'm Annie Kim, the Assistant Dean for Public Service. I'm very pleased and honored to have with us today one of our most distinguished alumni in public service, Kim Keenan. And she was very kind to come today, despite the fact that she's got bronchitis. But I think that she's probably going to be just fine. All right, so let me tell you a little bit about Kim. As many of you know, she graduated from the law school in 1987. Kim started out going to Georgetown School of Foreign Service before law school. After law school, she clerked for Judge John Garrett Penn in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. And then she went on to work at one of the largest firms in the country at that point, whose long name will defy you. Okay, here goes. Finley, Kumbel, Wagner, Hine, Underberg, Manley, Meyerson, and Casey in D.C. And Kim worked there for a few years doing special litigation, and then she joined a smaller medical malpractice firm in D.C. After that, Kim started her own firm for a number of years called the Keenan Firm, where she focused primarily on complex medical malpractice litigation, a mediation and arbitration practice as well, and litigation consulting and public speaking. And as probably many of you know, in 2011, Kim Keenan became the general counsel for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP. And I believe she was only the second woman who's held that position in the history of the organization. Kim has also done a variety of public service and been very active in teaching at law schools and been active in bar leadership for many years. So I won't try to actually sum up every single one of those times, because otherwise we'd be here for the next hour. But to give you the highlights, Kim has taught for a number of years at George Washington Law School, as well as Georgetown, and even here as well at the National Trial College at UVA. Among her many honors and bar activities, I'll just mention a few. Kim has been nominated as a DC super lawyer and a top lawyer by the Washingtonian magazine. She was named Woman Lawyer of the Year in 2007, from the Women's Bar Association, and recently in 2011, she was awarded by the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights the Wiley A. Branton Award for Civil Rights. Kim also served as the president of the National Bar Association, which is the oldest bar association for lawyers of color in the world. And during her time as president, she helped lead a nationwide push to send lawyers to educate voters on voter laws throughout the country. Kim has also been a past president of the D.C. Bar Association, and she has served on the Board of Trustees for the University of the District of Columbia. Now, to add to this already impressive list of accomplishments, I just had to point out that Kim's been on TV and radio in a number of capacities, so you can catch maybe clips of her on YouTube somewhere. But Kim has served... they live forever on the internet. So Kim has served as a commentator on Fox News. She's appeared as a regular attorney on legal programs like Power of Attorney and Dayside, and has appeared on a number of TV news shows on CNN and on radio programs as well. So please join me in welcoming Kim Keenan.
My mom would be so proud.
I'm always excited to come back to the law school. It's like every now and then I'll have a flashback, like that I'm still here and I'm in class. But then I'll remember that the building is so nice that I couldn't possibly have been in law school then, because we didn't have changing rooms and sexy stuff like that. So I'm assuming that a lot of you are interested in public interest, and I have a really what I like to call unusual career path. So I think that. I will start with that, and I'll give you some tips at the end, but I'll start out with that. For me, law school is about, this is a retrospective now, okay. I'll go back and do some of what I thought when I was here. But, you know, law school is about developing a set of tools. Really, that's really what it's about. It's about developing the best tools that you can for you, but really going into yourself and saying, you know, what do I like doing here? What am I good at? What would I like to know more about? And why? And I think that's such a great place to start, because, you know, you meet two types of law students. You meet law students who are like, I'm here, I want a job. You know, I'm trying to get this done. I want to be a lawyer. I want a job. And then you meet another set of law students who are like, and I want to do IP law with a commercial twist in a in-house firm that practices all over the world. And you're like, okay, well, that's... you know, that's good too. You know, that's another way to do it, you know. And I think, you know, reality is somewhere in between, you know, because that's what this is for. I mean, if you already knew what you were going to do, then it would take some of the fun out of law school. And you need to put all the fun in that you can. I do remember what the process was like. And, you know, now that I've been to many law schools, you know, I've started to see that the experience is the same. Like, the law students feel the same wherever you go. You know, they're all kind of, like, downtrodden and, you know, just trying to make it through to the end, you know, and trying to get through exams. I remember I had the same outfit that I wore every day for exams because it was, like, a uniform. Like, I couldn't think of two other pieces of clothing to wear, so I just wore this one jumpsuit. Thank God they were in style still, you know. But you know, it's part of the process. I actually think that a lot of sort of that searching and that questioning that you're doing, you know, when it starts to gel just after law school, you get what I like to call the bounce, right? All that confidence you thought you lost, it bounces, and it's like twice as much as it was. So there's something to look forward to is really what I'm trying to say to you. So after law school, I clerked because, you know, as you go here, you understand a lot. That's one of the big things that people say you really should do. And my third year, I discovered trial ad. And I was like, oh, my God, if I had known this, simple procedure would have been a hell of a lot more fun first year. Because, you know, it was just a lot of rules the first year. I was like, what is this? But, you know, when I saw how to use them to win, I mean, that's a whole different deal there. Now we're talking about winning. I can remember rule, you know, 11 and all the other rules. So I tried to build on the things that I loved. I clerked. I got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly in a courtroom. And, you know, if there's anybody here who thinks they want to be a law clerk when they graduate, I think that that's a fabulous job because I think that the number one thing when you graduate from law school, more than any other single thing, I don't care where you get a job or where you want to go or what you want to do, number one thing, best experience. People who will take the time to train you. I just hired a young woman who literally just graduated from law school. That's probably the first time we've done that in a really long time. And it has been dawning on me that I have to train her. Right? I can't just send her off and say, research. I have to mold how she does that because that's what happens when you clerk and that's what happens if you choose a place where people are willing to invest because now you have a skill, right, and a license, but how you use it has to be shaped. And it's the practice of law, not the perfection of law, it's the practice of law. So you have to get that practice. And you have to have people who are willing to say, when you negotiate for me, you never tell people what you have. You know, my new lawyer just did that. I'm like, you never tell people what you have. You try to get what they have, but you don't tell them what you have. So, you know, these are talks she and I will have. And again, there are normal mistakes, but somebody, I guess what I'm trying to say to you is be on the lookout for somebody who's willing to make that investment in you. Because here you are, this raw, awesome canvas, and now the question becomes what brush strokes are going to wind up on this canvas. So that's the number one way to pick jobs where you're going to get close experience. Sometimes in a big firm, what you really just want is that ability to do great research, to write a great brief, to write a great document, and to be able to work with lots of different kinds of people with different styles. And maybe once you get that skill, then you go somewhere else. You do something else. Or maybe you stay. I have one friend who she went to a firm and she's managing partner today. So, you know, for some people it's that way. But it's as different as each one of you. So it truly, my career path, I mean, if anything, I tell people a career path that looks like this doesn't exist. A career path that looks like this, you know, sometimes there's steep drops. And you're like, what happened? And then sometimes there's, you know, really high heights. And in order to be prepared for that, you have to, in your mind, you know, not have it be just a square or a circle or a straight line up. So after I did that, I went on to work for the very big law firm that crumbled in many pieces over the, in fact, while I was there, it was still crumbling. So it was this, you know, huge law firm. We had over 200 lawyers just in D.C. We were in two buildings. That's how many lawyers there were. And by the end, they had cobbled themselves together, and they literally broke themselves apart, and they'd be fighting in the halls. I tell people it was better than television because it was my life. I would go to work, and the partners would be in the hallway. Kim can't do that. Yes, she can. Kim can't go there. Yes, she can. God, this is what I was hoping for in law school. People would be fighting in the halls over my services. It didn't quite feel like a compliment then, though. It didn't. It just seemed like, uh-oh, somebody's going to lose, and I'm gonna definitely lose no matter which one wins, you know. But and actually, that day I won because I had a Virginia license, and I was, this is so funny, I was not the most junior person with a license, and not the most senior person with it. So out of 200 lawyers, I had three lawyers who had a Virginia license. And so because I was in the middle, right, I was just smart enough to have been there long enough to have done stuff, but not so senior that this would have been a menial task. So they sent me to this hearing, like, in St. Petersburg. So I got to, like, spend the whole day billing, traveling to Petersburg, walking into court and going, Your Honor, we request a continuance. And then getting back in my car. But I got to bill that at an extraordinary rate. It was awesome. It was just, felt really good that day. So I worked there for a couple years. And I think the first tip I want to give you wherever you work is pay attention to your surroundings. Get to know the people who are there. You know, if you see people packing up in the middle of the night, I don't care if you work for the government. You see people packing up in the middle of the night, ask yourself some other questions, not law questions. Will this be here tomorrow? Will I have a job tomorrow? This is a true story. The partner across from me had this secretary that he loved. I mean, he loved her. She could do no wrong. She could go to lunch whenever. She could do whatever she wanted. And one day, because I was an associate and I worked really late, I watched her pack up her desk and leave. And I kept thinking, she's leaving in the middle of the night and nobody said she was leaving. Something is very wrong here. And I didn't have to talk to anybody about it. I didn't write any cards. I didn't put it on Facebook. Hint. But I just said I better start looking for a job. And sure enough, when I left, like 2 weeks later, their doors shut down. And I credit it just paying attention. You know, nothing you learned in class, just some common sense stuff your mom probably said one day, pay attention. And I just remember thinking, if she's leaving in the middle of the night, something bad is about to happen, and my pay grade is too low for anybody to tell me what it is. But you know what? It's like the horror movies. I don't need to know what's in the building. If something bad is going to happen, and I know that something bad is going to happen, I don't need to know which bad thing it is, because bad is just bad. So I was gone, and people kept marveling. They kept coming up to me, how did you know? I was like, oh, I didn't know, but I knew that I needed to make a different change. So I know about other people's, you know, choices, but I didn't know about mine. So I was very lucky, though. I had spent some time injecting myself into the community, meeting other people, meeting other lawyers, meeting people who did other things. And I had a mentor at the time, and she said, you know, I have this friend, and he's looking for somebody. That's how she talked. He's looking for somebody. Apply. It really wasn't a question. It was more of a demand. And so, of course, I pretty much did whatever she said, and it was all good advice, so it was a good thing. And sure enough, literally, I interviewed on a Friday and I was hired on a Monday, although I should have seen the sign when he called me on Sunday to tell me that I'd be coming in on Monday for this interview. That was a foreshadowing of what my life would be like. But truly, I have to say, you know, this partner invested in me. And I think as I look back now on my career, I think about how important that was. I mean, he went to depositions with me. Or I went with him. I'm never really sure about how that worked, but let me just say this. When I took depositions, he'd go, ask it again! Ask it again! And the witness would just look at both of us like, did that really just happen? And some of the witnesses, you know, they were a lot older, and they, you know, a lot of them were doctors, and, you know, they were older men, and they were just like, is this for, do I even have to answer her questions? And he would go, ask it again! And I'd go, he told me to ask it again. So here it is. I'm going to ask it again. And then the doctor would, you know, roll his eyes and look at the lawyer, and he wouldn't answer. And of course, the partner would instruct me again, ask it again. And I got to tell you, to this day, you answer my question, I'm going to ask it again. And you know, over time, it just gets better with time. You know, now I'm like Clint Eastwood. I have asked you to tell me this. And, you know, you'd be shocked. It actually does work. I think it scares people a little bit. But so I really learned how to try a case. I really learned how to, I mean, truly, I could depose somebody right now if I had to. I mean, it's really scary. It's like you learn how and you do it so often that you can never forget it. And you, again, but if somebody takes the time to make sure you do it right, to make sure you do it right, because I'm telling you, when you clerk and you see people do it wrong, you just want to go out and say, who is teaching you this? This is bad. It looks bad. I'm young, and it looks bad. Don't get to fix this now. And so I really got to have the fullness of being an attorney in that way. But I started, you know, once you get into the rhythm of it, you guys, once you get to 3 years or so, you got to start doing some other stuff. If you see a life in public service, then do something in the community that you love. Election protection was something that was near and dear to my heart. You know, I consider that to be part of my heritage, making sure that people get out and that they're able to vote. And having this job is like having a pulpit and being able to say, I want people to be out and have a job, and getting to fight with people over it. That's why I'm a lawyer. I love a good fight. So if you think that you want to do public interest, you know, make that space. You know, I know when you have that first job, I don't care where it is. I don't care if it's for the government. I don't care if it's for a nonprofit. You feel overwhelmed. And, you know, give yourself a chance to make that adjustment. But once you do, work smart and go out and meet some people. Go out and be somebody's client pro bono. Go out and join an organization that will give you those opportunities. Because believe it or not, everything you do in that project on the side is going to make you that much, as I like to say, bigger, better, faster in your day job. And truly, me having this job is more a product of all the other things I did than it was of the thing that I was being paid to do. And I think that's the thing that you really want. You know, that's not something in law school you even think about. Like, did she just say the free stuff got her the paid job? But the paid job, you know, and that's really what I said, because I had started doing enough community work, and I realized that representing one person at a time was almost becoming tedious for me, right? I wanted to help bigger groups of people. I wanted to change, you know, a law or a policy or a rule or impact a community. And so it got to the point where just doing it one person at a time I just felt like it was slowing me down. And so the other activities gave me the opportunity to do employment policy, work on voting rights, and doing the bar leadership exposed me to a wider range of lawyers. So by, you know, running for office, I got that experience, and it's an experience unto itself. And, you know, having people campaign for you and against you, having people like you and really not like you, and you don't even know why, and having to pretend like none of it matters. Like, thank you so much. I know you're not going to vote for me, and you really could care less about my candidacy, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And, you know, it's really funny. You know, that seems odd, right, that I would say that to people, but believe it or not, a lot of those people either came back and voted for me later, or they helped me when I did win, because it's not about that moment. You see what I'm saying? If you're campaigning just for that moment and people who aren't interested in you, you're not interested in them, then campaigning is not for you, right? Because the campaign is not about who voted for you or who voted against you. It's about getting enough people to vote for you to win. So I almost never even talk about my opponent. One of the congressmen teased me. He said, you know, you're running for office for the D.C. bar, but you've never mentioned who you're campaigning against. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm campaigning against someone, but it's not really relevant. I'm telling you about me. It's like, it's all about me. I'm trying to get me to win. I don't care whether he wins. I'm trying to get me to win. So it's a mind. I guess what I'm trying to say is each thing has a mindset, and I tried a lot of things because it gave me an opportunity to use different skill sets. And so basically, after I had done everything I could do that my boss would let me do while still working for someone, I decided to try it on my own because, you know, eating what you kill is really only eating what you kill when you really have to eat what you killed. You know, it's one thing to work at a firm and you bring in, you know, I brought in business. In fact, the bigger the bar position I had, the more money I brought into the firm. But then you start to say, well, can I do it by myself? What would happen if I could do it by myself? And I will tell you that once you discover you can do it by yourself, then you know that your tool is actualized, right? I can do whatever I want with it. If you were to ask me right now what my career goal is to only do what I want for the people I want to do it for when I want to do it, while still being able to manage the things I'd like to do personally in my life. That's my goal. That's not a job. It doesn't have a title. But I'm willing to bet you that I'm gonna find something to do that pays me, that does that. I'm almost there. I'm almost there, because that really is my career goal. It's not, you know, to work in a certain place or be with certain people or do only certain things, unless they're the things that are building the building that I'm trying to build. And that's to me the evolution of my skill set. So it's not anymore just about being a better trial lawyer, winning more money, or helping more people. It's about taking the skills that I like to use most and putting them together in a way that nobody else has, and selling them in a way that nobody else can. Because each of you, whether you want to believe it or not, you know, sometimes in law school, there's this notion that you're going to become this, you know, collegial, you know, practitioner who pontificates and gives opinions. But in real life, you're a brand. You're selling something, each one of you. And if you don't know what you're selling, then you're probably not selling it well. So you need to know what your brand is. Everybody has their own. That's what's so special about this. You don't have to be the Kim Keenan brand, because you got the you brand. And that brand is as special as you are, but you have to know what it is you're bringing with the you brand. And so, you know, you want to choose things that help you to do that and help you to grow into that. And by doing my own firm, I will tell you, I think it was the most professional growth ever, because like I said, I still had to pay. I had a mortgage then. It wasn't like I was just, you know, hanging out. I really had to make money. I learned that to me, a perfect job has many different pieces, which is probably how I wound up with this job. I liked doing lots of different things. I didn't just, you know, after you litigate almost 20 years, you start saying, okay, let's let some other people do it, and I'll tell them how. Much more efficient. You know, but you have to know how yourself before you can really tell other people how to do it well. And sometimes I surprise people, because they don't, you know, in this day and age, people haven't litigated for a really long time and really tried cases. Like, I've really tried cases. So if that's something you want, pick a job where you really get to try cases. Don't just move paper around a lot and say you do litigation. Go in a courtroom and try some cases. And there's lots of jobs, you know, like U.S. attorney or public defender, and now they have federal public defender. I mean, they've got all kinds of permutations, all kinds of organizations that'll give you that kind of, here's the file, make it so. And that's fabulous experience, particularly if the organization gives you the training. Letting you do it wrong 1,000 times is not a good place for you. Bad for you. Bad habits are bad. So after I did was doing my firm, I was feeling good. I was had some money in the pipeline. I had different streams of income. And I get this call. And it's a friend, and she says, we told this headhunter to call you. They're looking for the general counsel of the NAACP. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Let me think if I know anybody. And you know, it's so funny, because I'm like, if you told me that story, I'd be like, what do you mean if you know somebody? What about you? You know. But I think this time it was more like, you know, I wasn't really looking for a job. You know, once you work for yourself, you're kind of like, you know, I can go to Greece next week if I want. And so that changes your whole perspective about reporting to people. So I was thinking about it, and I thought about all the things I love to do, and that's the touchstone of everything I do. How many of the, because there's always going to be some stuff, I'm telling you now, there's no job that doesn't have things that you're not going to be like, oh, Lord God, give me strength. Or as I like to say, I have my own acronym. It's called LFG. And at the office, I just go, LFG. And it's Lord, Father, God. So I need all three of them, because it's a bad thing that's happening. So there's always going to be some LFG days. But the question is, overall, are you going to be able to do some of the things that you love? And the more I heard about this job, the more I thought, okay, does one person really do that job? But then I started thinking, but that person does a lot of the things that I really love. And so today I stand here having held the position. It'll be 2.5 years, I think, next month. I'm the longest serving woman in 104 years. I'm the youngest woman in 104 years. And I do love my job. I mean, I love my job. If anything, if there were just a little less of my job, I probably would love my job even more. And if I had more staff, I would probably just be, I wouldn't be delirious because I have fever. I would really be delirious. But in this job, I get to wear like all these hats. So my actual title is General Counsel and Secretary of the NAACP. But what people don't know is we have a lot of other entities. So we're a 501c3, but we have a foundation. We have a number of sort of related entities, and so I am secretary and general counsel of them. So we have a magazine, so I'm general and secretary of it. Who knew? That was not in the job description. I got there and found that because they knew better, because, you know, I was like, well, dang, how do I do all of those jobs? But I've managed to juggle them. But essentially, I have several jobs. The primary job, obviously, is I am the attorney for the association nationwide. I defend branches when they need a defense. I give them permission when they want to file lawsuits on their own. So if they want to join the Section 5 voting rights case in Shelby County, Alabama, they write to the general counsel, and I review whether it's an appropriate case and, you know, whether they have appropriate counsel or whether I have to get them counsel, how we're going to pay for it, what we're going to do. And then I go to the CEO and say, Shelby County, the Texas conference wants to file this case or intervene in this case. You know, I recommend it, and he'll ask me some questions, and then we'll say yes. It's to keep Section 5, a very important provision of the Voting Rights Act. I was in the Supreme Court, you guys, watching these arguments. Another fabulous part of my job, that it's my job to go and hear the justices argue, and of course we've intervened, so you want to be there. It can be very scary, I confess, because when you hear them ask the questions, you go, do they live here? Do they leave the courthouse? Do they go? I mean, you know, and that's another thing about my job. I have traveled the country. My boss describes me as a blues singer. I'm like I go somewhere one day, and then I leave. But that one day I might be in Jackson, Tennessee. For those of you who don't know that, Jackson, Tennessee is like 80 miles from Jackson, Mississippi. So that means you got to get to Jackson, Mississippi before you can get to Jackson, Tennessee. And so you spend a lot of time, you know, getting from these different places and meeting people who are from these places who have actually, you know, gone to the polling place and it was moved. And it was moved across the street. And then if you vote across the street, well, they count it as a provisional ballot because you weren't supposed to be across the street. But yet we have the technology that they know that you're across the street. So why couldn't they count the vote? And one wonders, you know, when we became an America where we didn't want people to vote. I mean, it's like, so we're telling everybody that it's one person, one vote, but we're really trying to keep people from voting. And I mean, it's like, and I'll tell you something, having run for office, you know how I feel about it? If you can't make people vote for you, I don't want you. Even if you were somebody who stood for something I didn't believe in, if you campaign hard and you could, you know, hopefully, truthfully, convince people to vote for you, then I think you deserve it. This whole notion that you would just game it because you staunted the people from voting, it just seems so un-American to me. Mm-hmm. And so to have a justice say that voting rights is some sort of racial entitlement or preference is painful. It's very painful because my parents, you know, had to march across bridges in Alabama, and they went into places with for color only signs, and they didn't have freedom to just walk up and vote. And in a world where nobody pretends to be Ruby Lee Jones from Mobile, Alabama, I'm wondering why she has to have picture ID to vote when she doesn't need it anywhere else. She can get her Medicare benefits and not have picture ID, but yet, and she can pay taxes. That's my favorite. I love telling this to people all over the country. So you can find me to pay my taxes without a picture, with just some numbers. But you need an ID for me to vote because you're not sure it's me? Well, how come you're sure it's me when you're charging me my taxes? I'd like to know that. If somebody can figure that out. If somebody can explain that to me, then I'll, you know, feel a little better about it. But so, you know, I get to do that. That's one of the things we do. Of course, I'm very optimistic about it because I do believe in the values of our country. And I believe that part of my job is to help us be who we say we are. And so that gets me up in the morning. I went to law school to do that. But I also get to, and I was telling somebody earlier, I also get to negotiate the production contract for the Image Awards. I get to negotiate the network contract for the Image Awards. Who knew? And then, and because I'm the only one who knows what the contract says, it turns out I get to be like the executive in charge of the production. So I get to read the script. It's awesome. I get to say, not that star. Yes to Queen Latifah, no to Flavor Flav. It's just awesome. I mean, that's like my favorite superpower. No, never to Flavor Flav. So that's comedy. It's like you get your job, you're like, oh, this is the good part of my job. So that's the sexy part of my job. And then, of course, I protect the brand. I should mention to you a lawsuit. I just hired counsel for this last week. I did a cease and desist letter to a gentleman in, I think he's in Norfolk, Virginia, and he sued us because I sent him a cease and desist letter. Now, I will tell you, I have to cease and desist people all around the country all the time because people want to take our name and use it as they wish. They want to call us, they want to call themselves things like NAACPC, which is the National Association for the Advancement of Conservative People of All Colors. And then they want to negotiate with me. Well, you know, we can coexist together. We can? I thought the law said, you know, we picked it first. You could call yourself something else. I mean, and it's so funny. They kept saying, you're Goliath, and you know, we're David, and we're going to tell the press that you're trying to, make our free speech not free anymore. And I was like, no, you can call us whatever you want. I really don't care. I really don't. But you will not take my name that is, you know, trademarked and use it however you like, because now we're violating the law, and your free speech doesn't take away my free speech. I've spoken. But if you want to talk about us, you know, you want to say, you know, we're not children of God and we don't like, you know, non-colors, I mean, then go with it. You know, that's American. I can live with that, but I'm not comfortable with the notion that I could just take IBM's name. And what you think they're going to say? Oh, Kim just wanted to use it. You know, she got together with her friends and they wanted to call it International Blue Machines. You know, there's no way in the world they're going to let me do that. And needless to say, after I made my point to this gentleman many times, you know, again, I wasn't fighting against his free speech. Like I said, sticks and stones may break my bones, long as you don't mess with my trademark. So we had this new gentleman. He decides he's going to put out ads to raise money that rename us the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People. And it's because he decided that we weren't, you know, right to life enough. Now, mind you, we don't actually have a policy on it. And you can imagine why that is, because virtually if you throw a stone at our organization, you'll hit a minister or a rabbi or a priest. Who knows who you'll hit, but you'll hit somebody who's a minister. And from my perspective, it's meant to tarnish our name. It's meant to tarnish our name and to raise money for his cause. And I believe it clearly violates the law. And so I sent him a letter that said that. And he, like 5 days later, he sued us. So I countersued him back. I mean, you know, it's like if you do litigation, you know, threatening somebody with litigation, you know, you don't threaten, it's a promise. So we will be fighting that very vigorously. And, you know, it's not a secret, so I'll tell you. It's not public record yet, but it's true. I will fight it to the death. I mean, that's really how I feel about it. So I hope he really wanted to fight about it, because whatever it takes, wherever it takes, you know, if you see me on a fundraising tour for my litigation fund, then you know that's because we're going to fight it to the end. I don't mind if he wants to say, you know, we should stand up to protect black babies or unborn babies. He can say whatever he wants, but he can't use our logo. Duh. He can't use our logo, and then change our name and then, you know, put a round circle with a cross through a baby and think that, you know, we're just going to let it go. Like, oh, you know, he didn't mean anything by it. You know, it's not personal. You know, it's to tarnish our reputation. And, you know, when you are, when you've been around 104 years, you don't let people do that. I mean, nobody, I mean, again, if I wanted to call him, you know, international and, you know, put some expletive for the B machines, you know, they're coming for me. It's as simple as that. And so we would be foolish if we let him believe that we don't feel the same way. So I get to do that. I get to pick counsel. I get to, you know, it's, what's really great is when you get to shape your own legal team, right? I had, believe it or not, I had lawyers offer a tip, right? I had lawyers call me out of the blue and offer to do this litigation for me. Now, they weren't offering to do it for free. So, you know, not as good of an offer. And then the person that did want to do it for free, it just had too many loopholes. You know, free wasn't really free. So sometimes you just got to pay. And but these people gave me just the right mix of everything. They gave me the right mix of IP, the right mix of litigation, the right mix of Virginia attorneys. And so, you know, we'll be defending that action in Virginia, and I'll be rolling on down to Norfolk. I'll be the client, so I'm really excited about that. And I want people to see it's really important to us, so I'm going. I'm not sending anybody. I'm not sending some other team. No, no, no. This is important, and we need to get it right. But I also do things, you know, again, mundane things. We do all the contracts for the association, again, all the litigation, whether it's, you know, something over a hotel attrition issue or whether it's something as big as, you know, the convention and all the contracts that go with that. But then while simultaneously doing that, you know, I'm deciding, you know, am I going to file a First Amendment case in Philadelphia? I did. You know, what voting pieces we're going to file. You know, today I had a call on the way down here about an NVRA suit in New Hampshire. I love NVRA suits. If you ever get out and you're out there and somebody says, oh, we have the evidence. Oh, I love those. Because you almost always win. I mean, they're almost always, states are almost always violating the law. They just, I don't know whether they forget or people aren't good managers, but they really just don't give people the information so they can vote and register them when they're supposed to. And who knows? But when you sue them, they all want to fix it. Isn't that something? It's like winning. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. You just win every time. So you say NVRA to me, I say we win. I think at one time we may have had more of them than Justice did, because it's just like we can win these. We win them every time. I mean, it's like we win them every time, isn't it? I don't think, because the evidence is just so clear. And again, my challenge is that with a small staff and a country full of people who would want us to do something, is teaching people that lawyers don't just litigate, they negotiate. I have a lawyer on my team who negotiates agreements with the city that basically allow a community to participate in new businesses and business growth. So I'm thinking about new ways that lawyers can go out into the community and make a difference, not just, you know, I file a lawsuit, I sue, and I try to explain to people that you have to have evidence. And I like to have a lot of evidence because I don't like to lose. So more and more I'm really trying to literally gather information from around the country simultaneously and find ways to replicate good lawsuits and do them in more than one place. And again, so for me, that's the sexy part of my job, finding new ways to deal with old problems and to do it more efficiently and to use my resources better. I do other things that are unique to regular corporate lawyers. We actually have a union. So here, lucky me, right? I get a job and I'm there 6 months and somebody goes, you have to negotiate the union contract. Was that in the job description? No. So I learned how to do that in the last year. And you know what? It's one of my proudest accomplishments. My father was a United Auto Worker. He's retired. And, you know, imagine to have this hat on where you're negotiating with the union and they have their collective bargaining representative and their team, and then you have your team. But your goal isn't, you know, normally my goal is to crush. Okay, I should be clear about this. I want the most money. My new lawyers were like, what do you want? I want everything we can get. If there's something else that I don't know about, I want you to tell me, because I want whatever we can get, every dime, down to the last penny, every dime, and preferably quickly. So it was really hard to shift the gear and go, okay, these are all people who work here, and we need to be fair to everyone. So the object, the win, was not who gets the most chips. It's what's the best thing for everyone. And I'm really proud of that because, again, I had to pull back. And we did. We came up with an agreement that, you know, promoted people, made sure the benefits are the same, whether you're in the union or not in the union. And we have a lot of training things that are added to it. So I feel really good about it because, you know, sometimes people argue from the history, and sometimes history can be obsolete. I mean, you know, five of the jobs in the union we don't have anymore. You know, people were fighting with me over, well, we have to keep this. I'm like, you can have a footnote. If teletyper comes back, you can have it. I won't fight about that. So I don't fight about stuff that doesn't require fights. Put it in a footnote, it's there if you need it. But how about we put in the jobs that are here? And so everybody was really excited about that. So we really overhauled that whole agreement. And we're doing a lot of that stuff actually internally from the corporate side. I mean, you know, again, we're a civil rights organization. We have to be thoughtful about our brand. As far as I'm concerned, we live in a glass house. And so we have to make sure our glass house has plexiglass on it, because you want to make sure that you are doing the things that you're asking other people to do. And so I'm really proud to be a part of that. I could think of some other things. Like I said, I travel once a week. I think last year I traveled 85,000 miles, or 85,000 the first year and maybe 70 the second year. I traveled smarter, and I had a better secretary who didn't send me to Cleveland to get me to L.A. That's why I have a new assistant, because straight. That's how I like to fly. So, you know, I think for me, I wanted to leave you with some tips, because I think that in law school, I mean, hearing about somebody else's career is like, yeah, well, that's nice for you. But, you know, let's face it, you might be having a day where you're like, look, I need some help for me today. So I thought that I would give you some things that might really help you. I'm going to give you my first basic one. You know, obviously, it's, you know, maybe it's too remedial for some of you, but I want you to know that people look at your Facebooks. People look at what you are putting out in the universe about yourself. I think it's very important that you brand it. Just like whatever they're going to see when they walk in and you have on that perfect business suit, male or female, and you walk into an interview, well, that's what your website should look like. That's what your voicemail. I remember was having a law student call me, and it was like, hey! It was like, it was a party on the answer machine, and you're like, okay. So, you know, that's not a good look. It's not a good brand. And, you know, people don't think anything of it, but I'll tell you why I know that it's an issue. I teach at GW, and I teach trial ad, and people have discovery disputes in these trial ad classes, as some of you may know. And people use email because it's so impersonal. It's so easy to dash off a, you got on my nerves, you know, kiss my behind, and hit send. And no, that's the answer to that. Like if you find yourself writing, this is what I do. If I find myself writing something that even smacks of a personal comment, even if it's not meant to be, delete, and I just write, yes, we will have the document, or no, I will not be able to attend on Friday at 10 o'clock. I do not put detail or personal or no feelings go in any emails that I'm writing at work. I have no feelings. My feelings are at home. I need them, I go home. So, you know, your emails should not have feelings because it's very impersonal. It's easy for people to take umbrage at what you said. I once had a opponent, and she and I just, I mean, when I tell you, we just didn't hit it off. It was like this, that, you know, that moment when you see somebody and you know, you have that connection and it's perfect. We had the opposite. And we never saw each other. This was by phone. And at one point she said something to me like, well, sister girl, and I was like, uh-oh. I was like, no one calls me that. People would be afraid to call me that. So I stopped her and I said, you know, before we go down this path, let us erase the slate. Let us begin again. Let us pretend as though we are just starting and we're going to make this relationship work. And you know what? It works every time. I don't use it that often, but sometimes you just have to reset with people, because if you keep going where you're going, you're not going to get where you need to be. And if you're in litigation, if you're the plaintiff like me most of the time, I'll tell you what, I don't have no time to fight with you. I'm trying to beat you. I'm trying to get whatever it was I was trying to get, and I'm trying to get all of it, and I'm not trying to let you be spending that money because I'm trying to get it. So that means that I can't be fighting with you over, you know, whether you're going to give me 10 depots or 8 depots. I got to decide which ones I really need, get them, and be done. So, you know, good people don't fight with you. They beat you. That's what they do. They don't have no time for that other stuff, because what? They have a life. So don't do it. I had this poor guy in my class, and he was so embarrassed. He said some really, really bad things that would have got him in trouble in real court, things to another colleague, another student, and by email, and they were supposed to be meeting in person, by the way. Not by email. Twitter is not face-to-face. If the rule says face, it means face-to-face. It doesn't mean email-to-email. It means face-to-face. And for some reason, people, I mean, again, and maybe it's a technological error thing, but it's face-to-face. And practice that. Practice with each other, face-to-face, because I'm telling you guys, you say that, but I'm telling you, I'm litigating against younger people sometimes, and I feel so bad for them. You know, they don't know what face-to-face means. They don't know what to do with it. They don't know what to say. They're not sure what they're fighting for. It's so sad. But everybody has to learn somehow, so they learn when they don't get any of the stuff they wanted. So I don't want you to have that. I want you to have that advantage. Second thing, everybody here, you know, you want to meet people who do different things. You want to meet people who have your dream job. Okay, so networking is not walking up to them and getting their card and never calling them again. And then maybe 5 years resurrecting it when you're having a crisis and then calling them. That person does not remember you. I'm so sorry. I know it's hard to believe, because I think I'm memorable, but they've forgotten me, and they will forget you. So networking is about creating a connection, and the reason why I keep encouraging you guys to do things in the community is that's how you create a connection. You're there when somebody needs to connect with you. You're there because you're doing something that somebody else wants to do. And if you guys can do it together, all their friends become your friends. All their connections become your connections. All the places they go, you get to go. And so it's an opportunity. Like, people are always saying, oh, you know, it's so tight. The market's so tight. There's so few this. There's so little that. But that's because they're only looking in the two places they're looking and not looking in the 50 places that are all around them, but they haven't built up those opportunities and those contacts. So I think the more you train yourself not to do things that will turn those kinds of people off, the better. Let me give you some examples from my personal life. So, you know, young lawyer calls me and says, I've decided I should work for you. And you're like, isn't that nice? Thank you oh so much. Just the call I needed today. But, you know, they know nothing about me. They're not really sure what I do. You know, they got through to me. I call people back. You know, I will call you back no matter what. Sometimes not as quick as you might like, but I will call back. And don't tell people what they're going to do for you. You know what I'm saying? Tell people what you can do for them. And be really clear about what you can do. You know, if you're just going into those interviews and saying to people, I went to law school, I work hard, hire me. Well, that's you and everybody in the whole school. I mean, what's different about that? What's special about that? You know? And so when people call me and they're like, you know, I've been thinking about this and I saw you speak and I decided I should work for you. And I bet if I had my fellow here, she'd be like, well, you know, you need to think about that, because, you know, she works hard. And that means all guys' children got to work hard too. So, you know, if you're not down for that, I wouldn't pay her no attention, because she is going to tell you, you know, that's wrong. Go back. Do it again. Talk to so-and-so, do it this way, blah, blah, blah. But that, you know, again, we all had that. We all had that. But you have to have it clear in your mind what you offer, what you're good at, you know, where you hope to take it, that you've thought about what my clients need or what needs to be done where I work. And if you haven't done that kind of internal thinking, how are you going to discuss why you're better than the last four people they just saw and had the same questions. Same questions, same answers, same questions from the law students. I mean, y'all prepare. You know, everybody got the same notes. So you've got to bring the boost. You've got to bring what you do that's different, or as I like to say, bigger, better, faster than everybody else. And this is the one that everybody always says, well, if I come to work for you, I will get great experience. Well, isn't that nice? But I'm not the nice NAACP general counsel. I'm just the general counsel. So I have all this work to do, and I need people who are not working on their great experience. I need people who are making me have an extra hour to sleep at night. And so if you're not one of those people, I'm not trying to talk to you. So, oh, this is the tip that every law student needs, especially for your summer jobs. Okay. You get a job, you do a couple assignments, and all of a sudden, everybody wants you to do something. they're calling you. You're like, oh my God, I'm gonna get all this work done. You know, am I happy here? You know, you're thinking about this. If people are giving you lots of work, you are beloved. Do not go asking for compliments. Do not go, oh, are you giving me lots of work because I'm so wonderful and fabulous? No, just go, hey, love that new assignment. Get it done. Because the more work you have, that means you are just getting it done and people love you. And I'll tell you, if you are getting it done and people are giving you lots of work and you walk into somebody's office and go, you know, people are giving me a lot of work. Bad, bad. It's like a shark seeing blood in the water. Don't do that. Don't mess yourself up that way. People, you know, all this instant, you know, you guys come from the instant gratification, you know, the praise is good. We're all wonderful. Each of us is fabulous and special. No, not in a law firm and not really anywhere else where there are lawyers, right? We're not touchy-feely people, right? I mean, really, where are y'all planning to work where people are like, oh, your brief was so good today. I want another one of those. Maybe in class y'all do that, but I don't remember that, so I don't think the school's changed that much. So all I'm saying to you is, you know, don't be needy. You know, the less needy, and the, again, like I said, the work is the answer unto itself. And that's all you need for people to like about you. Oh, and if you want to get to know someone in a firm or in public, you know, anything, government, go offer to do something for them. Offer to work on a project. Offer to just do the work on the project they don't have time for because you want to get a chance to work with them. Let me tell you something. It works. It works every time. It works everywhere. It works for everybody. If you make that offer and you give somebody some real value-added work, you will either get better assignments, you will get to work with people you want to work with, and they will be amazed. I meet young attorneys all the time, and they're like, you want me to go to somebody's office and ask, can I do something? And you're like, yeah, that's it. That's what I want you to do. And they just look at me. I mean, like, it's, and it's really just so basic, right? It's not a law school thing. It's just a basic, commonsensical thing. You want to work with them. They have a lot to do. You aren't on their radar. They don't know you. They don't know your people. They don't know where you came from. They don't know you. And if you want to get to know them, you have to come up with things. Now, I confess, I cheated a little when I was at a firm. I kept a big jar of chocolate on my desk. And even the most dastardly partners will come to your office for a free bar of chocolate. I was dating a guy who worked for Nestle's. He brought me a box as big as this podium. Hey, it was either give them away or get really fat. So I gave them away, but guess what? I made all these friends. I remember thinking, this is good. If I had only known, I could have. So now I'm telling y'all, this is a free tip. It works. And it works for everybody. Men come. I think I had more men come than women. It was really surprising. I was like, chocolate? This is chocolate, but hey, free. You can have as many of them as you want. People were as happy as they could be. And guess what? I got more work out of it. And so when at a time in the 80s when for the first time ever people were laying people off, I was billing my hundreds of hours and giving out candy. And guess what? I didn't get laid off. So it must have worked. So, or, you know, it doesn't have to be candy. It could be something healthy. But, you know, it won't bring as many people. That's all I'm saying. You know, again, make sure you do something in the community after law school. You know, and again, I love coming back to law school, and I did participate in a lot of things. I raised money for the school. Because all those things contribute to who you become as a lawyer. And, you know, don't feel like, you know, I can't do that, or I'm not big. I mean, when I did it, it wasn't like I started out with some big contribution. You know, I just wanted to participate. I got a call from someone I really liked, and they were doing the Thurgood Marshall Chair. I really wanted to participate, and then they were doing the Law Alumni Scholarship, and I wanted to participate. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, you just go back because you want to do something good. You know, when I was invited to be on the Law Alumni Council, I replaced Elaine Jones. And it was just such an honor to be anywhere she had been, you know. And would you believe that same Elaine Jones, when I'm in a crisis about, you know, how do I do what I do with the resources I do, with the timing I do it, and with as few people as I do it, I call her. And it's so funny, maybe I call her because she went to UVA, maybe I call her because she takes my calls, you know, maybe, it's a whole lot of reasons why, but in the end, you know, having that resource, having that inspiration in front of me has made such a difference in who I get to develop to be. And I would commend that to you, because if you don't extend beyond yourself, then that's going to impact what kind of lawyer you become. And let me put in a plug for your classmates. You guys, y'all are going to wake up one day and, you know, somebody that you didn't even talk to in class is going to be the new Apple CEO. I mean, you said, I mean, it's like, it sounds like it's far-fetched, but I have people in my class and you're like, they're the what? Are you sure? Maybe it's a different person with that name, you know. But you know, your classmates are a tremendous resource. They're going to be doing. I was at the Supreme Court, and there was one of my classmates standing right there, and getting it. He was going to the lawyer's lounge, and I was going to sit in the court. I mean, you don't know where you're going to be. You don't know where they're going to be. You don't know who's going to see you somewhere and go, oh yeah, we went to school together. You know, they were on it then. You know, you just don't know where it's going to come from. So treat each other with that respect. Just assume that it's going to be okay. And even for people that you're not sure about, just give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, you don't lose any. It's not like costing you anything. You know, give them the benefit of the doubt. But I would also then say, get to know somebody you wouldn't have gotten to know. It's such a mistake that people have, that they, you know, they have their small section, or they, you know, they play. I played softball for whatever. You know, you want to get out and meet some other people. If you're only going to meet the five people you were going to meet, or the five friends you have by second year, you're missing out, because now you have cut off the 20 friends that you may wind up in the same city with. The 20 friends who may have to vote for you to be DC bar president, because it's 100,000 lawyers and you get to use the whole country. I mean, you never know. And I feel really comfortable that my UVA friends were a component of my ability to win in a bar that's the second largest bar in the country. So, you know, don't sleep on that, because, you know, again, I'm not saying just, you know, I mean, you don't know who it's going to be, so it's like the lottery. It's not like you can go, she's the one. She's going to be it. We got to be friends with her. No, you don't know who it's going to be. But I'm saying, you know, just reach out beyond yourself, and because you never know what it is you may need until you need it. And as my mother would say, if you don't have anything to lay away, you can't get it out. And then you have all these people who want to call you up out of the blue, people that never spoke to you, people that didn't have time to talk to you, people who wouldn't have written a brief with you, people who wouldn't have argued in court with you, and now all of a sudden, because you know, had the fortune to, all right, pick a good partner who trained you well, and now you're the fabulous IP guru of the world, now they want to talk to you, and now you're like, who are you? I got to get a book to figure out who you are, if you're really my classmate. So, you know, you have so many tools. You know, everybody wants to make it a hard time to be a lawyer, right? There's too many of you. There's too few jobs. There's a recession. Lawyers can do anything. I think maybe that's what gets me in trouble. I believe I can do anything. I believe that my skill set and my toolbox is big enough that if somebody says, Kim, do you want to audition for a television show? Here's my tape. You know, that's how I wound up on television. Here's my tape. I just sent it in. I didn't know anybody. So I'm saying to you that you have to take those leaps of faith, and who knows where they may take you. That television show might have lost me some clients if I had been really crazy like they wanted me to be, but the experience bolsters me when I have to get on and talk about voting rights, and I have people going, well, what about the voting fraud? I was like, but you're a reporter. If there were voting fraud, you would prove it to me, wouldn't you? And then, you know, then the person goes, well, you know, but there's voting fraud. I said, there is no voting fraud because it's statistically insignificant, and if you had it, you would have shown it to me, and we would then be talking about it. So let's talk about voter suppression. And so to have that kind of confidence, though, when a camera's looking at you, you have to have practice. You really have to have practice. So all these things will come together for you, however many you have, and it'll lead you to where you want to go. So I want to say this one last thing to you because you're in school, and I want you to remember this. There are always going to be some disappointments in the law, whether it's you got job B but not job A, whether you got, you know, half a point less on a test and it made the difference in something. There's always going to be disappointments. But the truth of it is, if you learn some disappointment at law school, it's preparing you to be a lawyer because you're going to lose some. You're going to win a lot, but you're going to lose some. And it's not about the win as much as what you do when you lose or when there's a disappointment. It's how you get back up when whatever it is slaps you down. And so what? You think you're going to live a whole life and not be? I mean, the truth is I'm more and more starting to put failure in my talks, like, you know, the election I didn't win or the case that, you know, it should have gone this way, but it didn't go that way, but, you know, I didn't want to pick it or whatever, because people spend so much time on the success of it that they don't realize that it's the thing that went wrong that sowed the seeds of all the things that go right. So I want to remind you that there's no testimony without a test, there's no triumph without a trial, and there have never been diamonds without fire. So you always have what you need to make the career and the life that you choose. And I want to thank you for having me today.